We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to the second hour of Focus. My name is David Inge. I'm the host for the program. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Henry Freinas at the controls this morning. In this part of Focus, what we will try to do is to take a look at a newly released national study on hunger in America. This is something that was put together by a group called Feeding America, based in Chicago, and tries to pull together all the information that it can gather about the need for food, emergency food, where we are now in America. And the important point here, and something we'll be talking about, is that recently there has been a very significant increase in the need. And so what we'll try to do is talk a little bit about how it is that need is being addressed, and basically on three different levels. On the level of a very large organization that tries to get together food that so it can be distributed, and then to sort of somebody who's kind of in the middle, whose job it is to try to pull this stuff together and then make it available to the people who then are giving it out. So we have three guests joining us by telephone from Feeding America in Chicago is Ross Frazier. He's the media relations manager. Here in the studio with us, Andrea Rundell. She's director of external and agency relations with the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, and also Donna Camp, who is director of the Wesley Evening Food Pantry in Urbana. So as we talk, and just here to begin, we'll talk with each of the guests and get a little bit more background and introduction for them, and then we'll go on and talk some more about the issue. Questions, as always, are welcome. You may call if you're here in Champaign-Urbana. The number to call is 333-9455. We have a toll-free line, and that one is good anywhere that you can hear us. So that's 800-222-9455. And now you can email us your comments and questions to will-talk, so that's W-I-L-L-talk, at illinois.edu. Any way you do it, we're certainly welcome for the input, and we'll try to get in as many callers as we certainly can. So here on the phone with us is Ross Frazier. Hello.
Hi, I'm here. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. And thanks very much for talking with us in the studio.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on your show.
Andrea Rundell, thank you. And
hello.
Donna Camp.
Hi.
Thanks. Let's first, as I said, by way of introduction, what I want to do is make sure that everybody knows about the three kind of organizations here we're talking about. And let me start with Ross Frazier. Tell us, what is Feeding America all about?
All right. Feeding America is a network of food banks, and Andrea is with one of them, our Eastern Illinois Food Bank. But we're a network of more than 200 food banks. And those 200 food banks serve every community in the nation. The food banks get food to what we call agencies, which would be soup kitchens, food pantries, emergency feeding centers, of which there are 63,000 across the country. So Feeding America is we're sort of a gigantic organization. Our food banks in total this year will provide close to 3 billion pounds of food to people at risk of hunger. And one of the big shocking statistics in our study that we just released is that we feed more than 5 million people each and every week, come through a soup kitchen or a food pantry from Urbana to Springfield to across the country.
And just to right up front, to give a little perspective on trends, how does that compare with, say, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago?
That's a good question. We do the study every 4 years. So and we've done this since 1993. So what has happened over the last 16 years or so is that every 4 years we were finding that we were feeding 2 million people more. So we went from 21 million to 23 million to 25 million. This year, we leapt from 25 million people that we were serving to 37 million people showing up at food pantries and soup kitchens who don't have the means to feed themselves or their families. So it's an enormous challenge It's a gigantic problem. And I'm really grateful that we're on your show because we really need to raise awareness that hunger is an acute problem in this country and everyone needs to pitch in and help.
Let me turn next to Andrea Rendell. Maybe you can talk just a little bit about the Eastern Illinois Food Bank and how long has the food bank been around now?
The food bank has been working for 26 years now here in Urbana. And our job is warehousing and distributing food to food programs like the Wesley Evening Pantry. So we don't serve clients directly. We serve the pantries. We get the soup to the soup kitchen. We get the food to the food pantry so that they can get people fed.
And how many different food pantries come to you for supplies?
We cover 14 counties, and we have about 250 different agencies and programs that are coming to us right now to be able to get people fed.
And over time, has there been an increase in the numbers of food pantries, the numbers
Absolutely.
Of organizations who are trying to do this?
Absolutely. We've gone up in the last 5 years from about 180 to 260.
All right. Well, Donna, tell me about the Wesley Evening Food Pantry.
Well, we're a relatively new program. We've been open 3 years. We're sort of unusual. We're open only once a month, and we're one of the few pantries, at least in Champaign County, that has regular evening hours. So we're open from 5 o'clock until 7:30 on the third Thursday of every month.
So obviously you must have thought that there was a need to be doing this at that time when other people weren't doing it.
That's correct. It just so happens that I had a conversation with Andrea 3.5 years ago, and she mentioned the need. And I, being a curious sort of person, said, well, how often would a pantry need to be open to make a difference? And she said, well, I think a pantry that was open once a month in the evening could make a difference. And so I said, well, I think I know a few people who could do that.
We got her going.
Okay. And tell me something about the numbers of people that have been coming then to your place there for your monthly evening.
Right. Well, we've certainly seen a huge increase. Now, since we've only been open 3 years, I can't say exactly how much of that is because people needed to find out about us and how much of it's for some other reason. But in 2008, we served a little over 400 people every month. In 2009, we served almost 1,000 people every month on that one night a month.
Wow.
Now, that's a stunning jump.
I'm occasionally very stunned.
Yeah. And as you talk to people, because I'm sure that you have the opportunity to talk to people and kind of get to know them and sort of get to know what their situation is, I wonder what kind of things people say. Particularly, do you hear people saying things like, I kind of can't believe I'm here, or that I would never have thought, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, I never would have thought that I would be here.
That's how I think we say it. What I hear, or in the way that they say it, is, this is the first time they've ever asked anyone for help. Or the story is they were doing just fine. Most of the people that we see are employed. That's why we have an evening pantry, so that people who are employed have a place to go. But something happened in their life that overset their budget, and now they're having to choose between paying their power bill and paying for food. And so it's new to them.
Yeah. I wonder, Ross, do you hear back stories from people about what's going on kind of on their end, that is on the level here where people like Donna and the people who work at the food pantry are right there doing the distribution?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the point of doing this massive hunger study. Mm-hmm. You know, the it's called Hunger in America 2010, and people can find it online if they want to really read about this in depth after we finish our conversation. But what our point of view on this is that in order to end hunger in this country, we have to understand it. So we sat down with 60,000 clients over the course of several months in 2009, to sit down with them face to face and say, people that were coming to emergency food centers, pantries and soup kitchens, to say, why are you here? What are the circumstances in your life? What kind of decisions are you having to make? So, you know, obviously most of this is driven by the economy. And if people want a real shocker here, the level that the government sets for just defining living in poverty, most of the households we serve have three people in them. So the threshold that the government sets is about $20,000. So if as an income, if you make less than $20,000, then that family is determined by the government to live in poverty. Well, if you can imagine feeding a family of three people, paying rent, feeding a family, clothing them, sheltering them on $20,000 a year, that's very difficult. The shocking thing is that 40 million people in this country live at or below the poverty level. So that's what's driving this. And what's driving this in recent years is what your other guests have said is right. For years and years and years, our food pantries and soup kitchens had what we called the entrenched client, people who didn't make a lot of money or made no money, who were homeless, had other issues, and I want to get back to the homeless issue as well. And these were our core clients. What has happened in the last couple of years is you have people for whom the rug has been ripped out under them. They've either lost their jobs completely or they're underemployed. They worked at a plant. They made good union wages. That plant moved out of town. All they can get now is a minimum wage job. And the work. So we have the working poor, the newly unemployed, and that's, you know, as unemployment has gone up and up and up and up and up in this country, there are a lot of people who have a lot of bills to pay, and they didn't expect to lose their jobs. You know, people who were making good dollars, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year, they had an outgo of expenses appropriate to their income. So when that rug is ripped out from under them, they want to keep their house. They want to keep, you know, they need to keep their car so they can look for work and go out and buy groceries. They have to keep their children clothed. So the one thing, you know, no one ever sits down at the beginning of the month and says, oh, I'm going to write out my check now for all the food I need for the next month. So food is always the variable in so many people's lives. And it's often what we found, as I'm finally getting to answer your question, is so many people told us that every month it's a challenge. This is 40% of the people that we spoke to nationally said they have to sit down and think, am I going to write a check to pay for my heat this month, or am I going to feed my family? Am I going to pay my mortgage this month, or am I going to feed my family? Am I going to buy the medicine I need, or am I going to feed my family? So people making tough, tough, horrible choices. And that's why the need has risen so dramatically.
Mm-hmm. Let me just real quick introduce all of our guests once again. Here, the last person you heard speak, that's Ross Frazier. He's Media Relations Manager with Feeding America. That's the nation's biggest domestic hunger relief organization. They're in Chicago, and they provide food to food banks like the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. And here in the studio with us is Andrea Rundell. She's the Director of External and Agency Relations for the Food Bank. What the Food Bank does is get that food, and then it passes it on to people who distribute it, like Donna Camp, who is our third guest. She's Director of the Wesley Eveling Food Pantry in Urbana, which is for now three years, has been operating one evening a month. And as she explained a little while ago, she got into doing that just because there aren't many pantries. Maybe there aren't any. Are there any others that are open in the evening?
There are some others in this area that are open on the weekend or have slightly extended evening hours. The Salvation Army Pantry certainly does. But so many of the programs, and I work with about 46 different food pantries in Champaign County, so many of them are open between 9 and 5 Monday through Friday because that's when the volunteers really have the capacity to do it. And unfortunately, as Donna was pointing out, and as Ross was, you know, making mention of, so many of the people that we're working with right now have jobs. They're working. They're underemployed. They're unable to make those ends meet. As Donna said, they've had some instance in their life recently, perhaps a medical problem, perhaps the car broke down, you know, you don't know what. And they're finding that, you know, they need help too. but they can't leave their job in order to go get the food. So that's the real sort of motivator for making sure that there was an evening pantry in the area. And I'd say, Donna's numbers show it to be wildly successful.
Yeah. It's actually pretty sad when you put it that way, because obviously we're talking about a huge need and a need that has really been increasing.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is a really weird thing to say, oh, yeah, we're being really successful, when your success means that more and more people need you.
Yeah. Comments, questions are welcome. 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. I'm just maybe a little curious about, for the food bank now, how, over time, since the need has grown and you're supplying more food pantries, as a practical matter, what has that meant for the food bank?
That has meant explosive growth for us. Mm-hmm. It's just been amazing. We can talk about there being a spike because of the, economic problems we've been having in this country in the last couple of years. But over the last 4 years, for our portion of the hunger study, just the statistics for our 14 counties, over the last 4 years, from 2005 to 2009, we had a 133% increase in clients. But we were already looking at that. So if we go back another 4 years and look at the 2001 to 2005 numbers, we had a 134% increase in clients. So, we've been seeing this just rising really quite steadily for about 8 or 9 years. And that the spike in the last couple of years perhaps wasn't as enormous to us as it has been to other places around the nation, because we've been just watching this steady climb.
Hmm. And I don't know how Donna would want to add on to that. I guess one of the things I'm sort of curious about is when you started out doing this, did you have any idea really?
No.
Really what you were doing?
No, and if we had, we would have never even tried. But when we started, since there wasn't really a pantry to look at to say, oh, this is what their experience is, Andrea and other people at the Eastern Life Food Bank predicted that we would be seeing 100 to 150 people on our one night a month, fairly shortly. We did do that within the first 6 months. But then, of course, a year later, we were seeing 400. And, 2 months after that, it was 800. So we really had no clue about what to do. And fortunately, all of our volunteers have been very adaptable, because we've had to radically change our procedures and how many volunteers it takes. And so that we now use a building, the Wesley Foundation, which takes up an entire block. And we use the entire building from 1 o'clock in the afternoon until we finish cleaning up, or 9 or 10 on that one night.
How many volunteers do you have?
Our list of available people is 700. And in the 24-hour period from the day before the pantry, when we unload the truck, to the day of the pantry and finishing cleanup, we use 100 people.
Mm-hmm. And that's, I'm sure, involved in everything like unloading the truck, carrying stuff, setting stuff down, figuring out, do you put together packages of things?
No.
Or how exactly do you work it?
Donna has a wonderfully client-centered pantry.
No, I actually don't know what people have in their cupboards, so I didn't feel like I was competent to say, here's what you should take home with you. So we set up basically a grocery store that we can get about 100 families through an hour. And so we give people a certain number of grocery bags according to how large their family is, and we say, here's the food, and they pick what they want. As long as it fits in the bag, they can have whatever they want, as much as they want.
So you don't monitor, you're not looking over anybody's shoulder to see what anybody's taking?
No, other than I like to have conversations with people about, they wish we had something different, and if I can get it, I can try. But pretty much, if it fits in the bag and they want it, they can have it.
Is that the way most people operate, or does everybody sort of do it a little bit differently?
Everybody does it a little bit differently, but that's actually pretty unusual for pantries. For a lot of pantries in our 14-county area, their procedures, the way they're set up, the number of volunteers and the time and everything that it takes for them to put it together, they may pre-sack things and put a whole bunch of things together and then have some choice items and say, okay, you know, here's just a sort of standard bag of this is what we have. And there are all the bread and bakery products. Help yourself to a loaf of bread or a pie or whatever it is. And there's all the vegetables. Decide what vegetables you would be interested in, what fresh produce you want to take. And so there's lots of different variations on this whole thing. But Donna's is the only one of the few that I know of that actually just say, okay, this is where you're at. Go for it.
Yeah. And I would pipe in here and say that that situation's a little unusual because most food pantries have to control how much food they're giving to people because they can't, you know, if you have 500 people in line and you have just enough food for 500 people, you have to apportion it appropriately. And sadly, many of our food pantries, when they have a distribution night, they run out of food. Every scrap of food is taken. But what I like what she's doing with letting the clients have choice, and we found that this really cuts down on food waste. Because if you hand people a bag of groceries and just say everyone's getting the same thing, people are going to get items that they don't want and they won't use them. You know, if someone doesn't like canned peaches, they're not going to eat them and they're going to go to waste. So we find that's really helpful to cut down on food waste, is to let people choose what they're going to use. You know, we have some food, we have this amazing food pantry in Los Angeles, for example, that serves both a kosher clientele and a Hispanic clientele. So they have all different kinds of food there. And what people do at this particular facility is they get a checklist and they're handed a sheet and they can check the items that they want. And then the volunteers run back and package it up for them. So everyone's getting what they'll use and what's appropriate for their families.
Okay.
We do have a couple of pantries in the area that do that too. There's just so many variations.
We're at a midpoint here. We have some callers that I want to get in. One thing here, maybe for a minute, I hope the callers won't mind if I make them wait another minute here, but I do want to, again, ask a kind of a practical question, and I want to ask Ross Frazier. The food that you get that then you pass on to the food banks, that then they pass on to the pantries, where do you get it from?
Well, that's a great question. We get a lot of it from food companies and from the grocery industry, grocery stores and food manufacturers. So and agricultural producers. And we have been one of the great success stories in charities in the last 20 or 30 years because we've been able to convince people that we need this food and we'll make use of it and we'll make sure that it goes to people who really need it. So, for example, it is not unusual for us to get a call from the Florida Tomato Growers Association, and they'll say, we have 4 million pounds of tomatoes that we cannot bring to market. The market won't absorb them. Can you take them off our hands? Absolutely. So in that case, all we have to do is figure out how to ship them from the donor to the food banks. We get a tremendous amount of produce this way. About a quarter of all of the food that we move is actually fresh produce, which is a huge sea change from 25 years ago when it was all packaged and boxed food. So we work one of the reasons that we also exist is if we didn't, you'd have 200 different food banks going to Kellogg's or General Mills and knocking on the door and say, please help me. Instead, we're the one point of distribution for nationally for all of the food companies. Another thing, and I don't want to keep your callers on hold too much longer, and I don't know what's happening downstate in Champaign. One of the other great success stories that we've had recently is Walmart has started contributing food to us, what we call their store donation program. So if you or I walked into a Walmart and wanted to buy yogurt and saw that it expired tomorrow, I probably wouldn't buy it. I would dig around to find something that expires next week. What Walmart is now doing is they're allowing us to rescue food, and it's a huge operation, and it's still rolling out, so it's not up and running everywhere. But we're rescuing food. as it approaches its sell date, it's still safe. Safety is of primary concern. But then we're able to get that to a food pantry or soup kitchen right away so it can get to someone who needs it. With Walmart alone, we will be able to rescue about 100 million pounds of food just through that store donation program this year. So that's 100 million pounds we didn't have 2 years ago that we now have.
We're at our midpoint here, and I have callers, and we'll get to them in just a second. I'd like to reintroduce our guests. Ross Frazier is the media relations manager with Feeding America, based in Chicago. It's the nation's biggest domestic hunger relief organization, as he has explained. They collect food. They provide it to the food banks that then pass it on to food pantries. Here in the studio with us, Andrea Rundell. She's director of external and agency relations with the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. Based in Urbana, and also here with us in the studios, Donna Kemp. She's director of the Wesley Evening Food Pantry, also in Urbana. And part of the reason that we wanted to do the program was just to call people's attention to a major new study, Hunger in America 2010. This was carried out by the folks at Feeding America. And sort of the headline here is that more than 37 million people, that's one in eight Americans, and that includes 14 million children, nearly 3 million seniors, receive emergency food every year through the nation's network of food banks and the agencies they serve, like the ones that we've talked about here this morning, and that this represents a 46% increase since the last study that the folks at Feeding America did in 2006. And as Ross said, you can find them on the web, and you just put Feeding America into your web browser, you find them. And if you'd like to read the study in detail, and it is there, you can certainly do that. Questions are welcome. We have several callers here, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And we'll start in Charleston, line four. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I think it's excellent that you're able to provide these services for all these additional people. Is it possible to also educate them as to, like, the political process that they may have a part in? Because I see, and I don't mean to demean anything that these food banks are doing, but it seems like that's kind of treating a symptom, and there's still an underlying cause. And as many people as you're able to service, is it possible, even legal, to give information about here's what's going on locally or in your state or even federally that would affect your food bank, your job? Is there ability to do that at the same time that you're providing these basic need services?
Well, I think that's a good question. Donna, I think, wants to say something about that.
Yes, actually, I think that's a very important role that we can have. And in fact, one of the things that we do while people are waiting for their turn to shop is in the waiting area, we have a resource center, many resource centers, where community agencies can come in and talk about the kinds of services they have, since people who need food probably also have some other needs in their lives that they may not know about the resources. But that also includes organizations that want to provide the kind of information that you're talking about. So we might have the Champaign-Urbana Healthcare Consumers Group come in and provide literature on healthcare legislation and do letter-writing campaign. And, of course, that's voluntary for any of our clients. They can take the literature or not. But I think advocacy is why I'm here. And I think that the people that I serve certainly want to know how can they make their voices heard.
And I would also ask, I'm curious, in the Champaign area, are you all involved in food stamp outreach and helping the people show up, enroll for food stamp benefits?
We are. We work with our agencies to make sure that they have food stamp applications that they can distribute to their clients. And we are in the midst of expanding our interest in that and making sure that people are getting enrolled for food stamp benefits. It's a very low enrollment against how many people could be getting food stamps.
And I'm glad that this come up. This may and could be indeed another conversation, I suppose. But that is the fact that there are people who would qualify food stamps that aren't getting them. And so
Absolutely.
The question is, well, is it that they don't know? Is it that they don't know what they would need to do to do it? Is it possibly that they, you know, not entirely happy about about having to say yes, I, I could benefit and need this?
This is part of what was covered in the hunger study. So in our 14 county area, I can speak to that. One of the things that one of the areas of questions that we asked people were, what sorts of resources are you already accessing? Are your kids getting school lunch or school breakfast? Are they accessing the summer feeding program? Do you get the link card, the SNAP? And we found that in our area, only 52% of clients of food pantries and soup kitchens are on the link card, do get SNAP. And that's worrisome because that's a resource that we're really leaving sitting on the table. That's federal dollars coming right in. For every dollar that's brought into a community through SNAP, there are estimates that $1.79 or $1.89 is generated in the local economy. So it's actually something very helpful in all kinds of ways, as well as just making sure that people have food. So that's something that we're interested in seeing happening and that we're trying to get more engaged in at this point.
Right. And at our pantry, that is something – that's a resource table that is – up every month is someone who helps actually do the food stamp application online and helps the person make sure they have all the documentation they need and knows what kind of questions they're going to be asked so that when they actually have their appointment at the Health and Human Services office that maybe they only have to go once instead of having to go back several times.
And I guess I would just add that, you know, your caller has a very good point that the emergency food system is a responsive system. It is not addressing the, you know, root causes of poverty and hunger in the United States at this point. And that's why we have to do advocacy. That's why we have to get out there and talk about it and, you know, take opportunities like this to talk about hunger and what can be done about it and make sure people know it's real out there so that they can go, wait a minute, we got to stop this.
Well, I appreciate the comments of the caller, and I want to continue and talk next with someone on our line number two, and this would be someone in Urbana. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I have a quick question about statistics. I mean, the language can sometimes get confusing and may lead to credibility problems. I think Andrea Rendell mentioned something like 134% increase in clientele over a certain period. Was that 134% increase, or was it a 34% increase?
It was 134% increase.
So you were actually more than twice as many.
Yes.
At the end. Okay. Thank you.
Thank
All
you.
Right. Well, again, other questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Another caller here. This is someone in Champaign in line three. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yes.
I'm looking out at my snow-covered backyard that some years is a garden, and inside I've got a mammoth pile of seed catalogs. Now, do anybody, you know, Victory Garden-wise, grow food and bring it to you? And if so, if you do accept that sort of thing, what would be the best thing to grow?
We absolutely do encourage people to share the wealth of their gardens. And I'll just say flat out, best thing to do is not to bring it to the food bank. It's to bring it directly to a local pantry where they can turn it around immediately and get it out to people. So contact your local pantries in order to be able to find out, you know, when it would be best for them to receive that product so that they can get it out to people. If it comes to the food bank, I mean, we'll get it out to people, but you've put a sort of for produce with its really short life. You've put an extra step in there that doesn't need to be there, and you can have a great relationship with your local pantries around it. Mm. As to things that you might grow, strongly recommend something with shelf life. if you're growing tomatoes, please don't pick them at their peak of ripeness because it may be a few days or a week before someone's able to get them. So pick things a little early and pick things that will store for a while. Green beans are going to do better than tomatoes. Winter squash, which has great storing capacity, is going to be better than most summer squash. So think about those kinds of things.
Donna, have you had people do that with your food bank?
Oh, yes. We definitely have people who plant an extra row in their gardens and donate what they have to us. It's a little more difficult since we're only open once a month. the harvest needs to match the the pantry date. But most of the people I know that do this, they have three or four pantries that they talk to so that whenever they pick things, they know who needs it that particular week. But I agree with Andrea. It's got to be things that aren't squishy. you know, if you're feeding 300 people, you need a huge amount of produce, and it's all going to get stacked up. So not tomatoes, I think.
Well, this gets me thinking about the fact that Ross talked about how over time there's been this change in what they're providing for the food banks from the point of when it was a lot of it was, I'm sure it was dry goods, it was packaged stuff, so that there now is, they are providing produce. And I would think that for the food bank, that this would be a big issue that you're now dealing with stuff that's perishable.
Oh, yes.
And that I'm sure that, well, for example, what do you spend on refrigeration now because you have to have that?
I couldn't give you an exact number on that one, but we moved to a new warehouse in 2002, largely because we needed to change the way we were doing things because the supply of food, different types of food coming through, were things that, you know, we needed to be able to handle. So we moved from 11,000 square feet to 39,000 square feet. So we really, really grew. And we also now have two very large refrigerators and two very large freezers that you can stack pallets and pallets and pallets of food into. A lot of that is just what's going on with what's changing in the marketplace. You see more frozen foods. You see more prepackaged foods when you go to the grocery store. And we have to be able to accept those products when they come available to us. We have a wonderful relationship locally with W. Newell, who is the North American supplier for produce for places like County Market and Save-A-Lot. And lucky for us, they're only about a half a mile away from us. And if they, again, have produce that they can't get to market, we'll take it. So this last year, they gave us 350,000 pounds of produce, which is stunning and really, really wonderful. So those local folks that we're working with, not just through the network, but locally, people in our 14-county area, we also have to make sure that we can make the best use of what they have for us, too.
Yeah, and I would also chime in and say what they're experiencing locally has happened nationally. And part of this has been a reflection of how America changes the way they eat. The food, the grocery stores have adapted. So the food coming to us is different than it was 25 years ago. And it has been a tremendous challenge for our network because they've needed to put in huge refrigeration areas, freezer space, et cetera. Once upon a time, our food bank in New Orleans wasn't even air conditioned, if you can imagine. So, and we've also, in line with that, we've also had a real need to improve the nutritional quality of the food that we provide. If so many people are going to rely on us for food, then we have an obligation to make sure that they're getting good, nutritious food. So now about 75% of the food that goes through our network is identified as nutritious food.
We have another caller here. Let's get him line number one in Champaign. Hello.
Was this line one?
Yes. Go ahead, please. Yes.
I tuned in the middle of the program, so I'm not sure if you've already covered this. But while I'm not in favor of bureaucracy and red tape, do you have any financial qualifications that the people you give food to must meet?
Yes. From the food bank level, because we're a nonprofit, charitable organization, we're an independent, we have obligations to make sure that we're getting food out to people in need. And so under IRS regulations, under our agreement with Feeding America, we establish a scale, as it were, of, you know, this is who, you know, you need to prove to us, our pantries need to show to us that they are feeding people in need. We ask them to establish their own level of what they call need. And we ask them to do it based on the federal poverty level. So Ross was quoting where the federal poverty level sits a little bit ago. It's about $20,000 for a family of four right now. And we ask, say, Donna, okay, in order for you to objectively say we are feeding people in need, not just, well, people we think are in need as they walk up or don't think they're in need, so we turn them away, Donna, choose some level of the poverty level. Ask people to look at that and look at those figures and say to you, yes, my family qualifies under this. And so a lot of my pantries choose about 150% of the federal poverty level and say, okay, when people come in, we ask them to look at the numbers and say, does your household make this or less in a month? You do? Okay. In that case, we can serve you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, thanks. Donna, do you want to talk anything more about that? Okay. We have, in this part of Focus 580, about 10 minutes left, and let me again introduce our guests. Andrea Rundell is Director of External and Agency Relations for the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. They're based in Urbana, and they provide food to how many pantries?
About 250, 260 food programs across 14 counties.
All right, and one of them is the Wesley Evening Food Pantry in Urbana, and Donna Camp is here. She's the director of that pantry. And then also joining us by phone is Ross Frazier. He's the media relations manager with Feeding America. They're based in Chicago, and they are the ones who are collectors of food. They get together the food, which then goes to the food pantries the food banks. And again, tell me, Ross, now, how many banks are there in your network?
There are exactly at the moment 203.
200. And all across the country?
All across the country. We serve virtually every community in the nation. So, for example, we have here in Chicago, it's the Greater Chicago Food Depository. New York City, it's the Food Bank for New York City. So they many of them serve very large geographic areas or in tens of thousands of people.
And where does your funding come from?
We do not receive any government funding. We do move a lot of product, which Andrea and Donna can talk about, that comes through the USDA. That doesn't come directly through Feeding America. But we rely completely on donations from individuals and from corporations and foundations. And I wanted to talk about some good news in all of this bleak news is that in the last couple of years, as America has become more aware that there are hungry people living as their neighbors, and corporate America has become aware of this, they've really stepped forward. Last year, these are troubled times for charities. Last year, we actually exceeded our fundraising goal by $19 million. We raised $75 million last year, and we needed every penny of that to meet the need, as you've heard what's happening in your area, where first it was 100 people, now it's hundreds of people showing up at just one food pantry. So the good news in all of this is that corporate America has been very responsive to the needs. I heard a lovely story today, which is a good news story. We have a little department here that opens. They spend their day opening envelopes of checks and random donations that come in. And earlier this week, we got a letter from an 11-year-old girl in Maryland who decided for her 11th birthday that she would have a dinner at home, and instead of having presents brought to her, she wanted to collect money for Feeding America. So she sent us a check for $162 and photographs of her birthday party. Wow. So that was extremely heartwarming to all of us, because that $162 will go a long way to getting food to hungry people. And so it's very heartening that people are hearing our message and that they're stepping forward.
All right. We have about 5 minutes. I have one more caller here I would like to go to, and that's the line 4, the toll-free line, and up in Geneva. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, good subject, actually. I grow my own vegetables during the spring and summer, basically whenever we can. And I've donated it to the food bank and other people. I also donate my time to Habitat for Humanities, and there's a lot more people doing that. But I think there's so much waste in these restaurants going out. I cannot believe how much, like my wife and I, we decided we're going to start. Our way of kind of giving back in a way is if there's any leftover food, I got a family in my block that's needy. I donate some of the stuff that I can to them. They're in turn doing my good deed. But I'm just wondering, do you guys connect with some of these restaurants and some of these small shop owners like the bread stores, like Great Harvest Bread, and so forth, because I see them dumping so much in the garbage, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And Andrea, do you try to work with businesses like that?
We do try to work with businesses as much as we can. Food rescue, which is what you're describing, going to restaurants and basically getting the leftovers after the meals are done for the day, is actually pretty tricky. Being able to transport the food at appropriate temperatures, making sure it's cold enough or hot enough, requires special vehicles, requires a very specific place to take it to. So it's really a big coordinating effort. And people have suggested it before. I'm not sure that in this community we're big enough to be able to handle that kind of effort. There's an extremely successful effort in New York City, which is separate from the food bank in New York City. And they spend every day doing nothing but driving their special trucks around, picking stuff up and taking it to places that they have agreements with, largely shelters and soup kitchens. We don't really have enough capacity as shelters and soup kitchens in this area to be able to take all of that. So while we all kind of look at it and wince, sometimes it's not something that we really have the capacity to handle. We do make sure that we go to local grocers and get things. We get bread and bakery products from the Schnucks stores in the area. We pick those up 4 days a week. We are working with Walmart. At this point, we have 11 Walmarts in our 14 counties, and we pick up bread and bakery products from them, deli products, all kinds of things. So to the extent that we can manage to get that done, we definitely are trying to do it. You know, it's one thing to point out of our, you know, we're a 14-county organization. We have 12 employees. So we kind of can't do everything yet. We'll get there. We are going to be getting there. But today we can't do everything. So,
well, what that says is that there, in doing what you all do at all the three levels you do, there are significant logistical issues about how it is you get stuff and you transport it, and you want to make sure, you know, I'm sure there are food safety issues.
Absolutely.
That you really have to keep in mind.
Absolutely.
As well. You know, you don't want somebody getting sick because of something that they've gotten.
Right. Just because we're a nonprofit doesn't mean that we, you know, can skip out on anything like health regulations. And so, you know, we're regularly health inspected at the food bank. I go out to all of the pantries and talk to them about food safety, and I do things like say, exactly how far off the floor are you, you know, storing these goods? I check temperatures in freezers and all of that sort of thing. I'm food safety certified so that I can walk around and know what I'm doing at that point. Mm-hmm. So we do our best to make sure that everything is as safe and as nutritious as it can be.
We're coming down here to maybe about a couple of minutes left. I guess I just want to kind of go around and see what sort of last sort of thoughts you all would like to leave with folks. And I'll start with Ross Frazier from Feeding America in Chicago.
Well, in the midst of all this bleak news, I'd like to say that there is a little bit of good news. Not only do we have wonderful donors, but as the other two guests can attest, we have wonderful volunteers. Volunteers are actually the backbone of our network. We couldn't do what we do without them. We estimate there's something like 1 million volunteers within the organization across the country. And people can help in simple ways. That's my last message. They can donate time, food, funds, whatever they can do. Even a few dollars go a long way.
Well, Andrea?
I guess I'd like to sort of draft off of what Ross was saying there, is that because the system that we have works like it does, we are able to take a small amount of money and make it go very far. At the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, we estimate that for every dollar donated to us, we can get $10 of food out the door. And so that makes it an exceptionally easy way to make sure that you can help people. And we can't do it without that kind of support.
I guess the one thing I would want to leave with people is that every single person can make a difference. And I don't think that I believed that 3 years ago, but I say I absolutely believe it now. Even in the financial sense, I can fill a paper bag of groceries for $6.50 because I'm a member of the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. I have people, I have kids, I have all sorts of people who figure out how to donate $6.50 every month. And by far, we have more $6.50 donors than $1,000 donors. Mm-hmm. And so every person can make a difference.
Well, we need to stop here. I do also, just by the way, I want to mention that here at WILL, we've been working on a reporting project going back to last summer when we started out identifying the economic downturn as being a real serious problem and wanting to look at how that affected people in East Central Illinois. And this particular issue, hunger, was one that just smacked us right in the face. And we said, well, it's something we want to try to pay attention to and do some reporting on. And we've done kind of built a partnership with the folks at the food bank and with places like the food pantry and with Common Ground Food Co-op and people in this area who are really concerned with it. And we've done some reporting on this, and it's something we're going to continue to follow. So one thing that you might do is look at a website that we've set up. It's called Will Connect, just like it sounds, willconnect.org. You can take a look at what we've done there. And certainly if you'd like to read this study that I've talked about a couple of times, Hunger in America 2010, that was done by the Feeding America folks, that's online. So you can do that. And then I would say, you know, if this is something that concerns you, find out what's happening where you live. If you're in a church, find out what your church is doing. If you're in a social service organization, find out what they're doing. And if you're not in one, we'll see what the closest one is and find out what they're doing. And if it's something that you where you want to get involved, well, do that. So thanks very much. Ross Frazier, he's a media relations manager at Feeding America in Chicago. Thanks for talking with us.
Absolutely.
Andrea Rundell, Director of External and Agency Relations with the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. They're based in Urbana.
Thank you very much, Andrea.
And Donna Camp, she's Director of the Wesley Evening Food Pantry in Urbana. Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we go, we'd like to remind you that programs here on WILR are made possible by the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra presenting To Stir the World on Friday, February 19th at 7:30 p.m. at the Krannert Center. The program features Vienna-born Gernot Winneschoffer on Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto in E minor, Opus 64. This is WILL, and WILL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. And that's it for us, but we want you to stay tuned. More coming up as part of the afternoon magazine, and sitting in as host today is Jay Pierce.